Hey, it's John Canzano. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. And thanks to all the listeners and all of our sponsors who help make the Bald-Faced Truth the number one sports radio show in Portland. Enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. John Canzano.
People don't like to hear the truth all the time. You know, people ask you questions, but they don't actually necessarily want to hear the answers.
Love it.
I mean, I like the guy. I listen to him every day.
Canzano, what's going on, man?
He's dead sexy.
I think he does a damn good job.
I'm going to be rooting for this young Portland team, which, you know, is a terrific team. You guys just have a terrific nucleus.
You pay attention to detail. That's why you're so successful.
I just think he's honest. Yeah. Straightforward and to the point.
You're bringing up something that's probably the average sports fan watching the game didn't pick up on.
I'm really glad to see that someone who speaks their mind is not afraid to tell it how it is.
He's a smart guy, just my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man.
I let my mother listen to him.
Hate him.
You don't want to get nobody a second chance.
Trump. To represent that as some sort of subterfuge like Jack and Dono, I would have expected far better.
He just sounds like an egotistical idiot.
He was rude, crude, and wrong.
Love to hate him.
Yo, John, I can't stand you. I can't stand you, but I come back every day to listen to the show.
Bald faced truth teller.
Who is he to judge?
Well, he can raise your eyebrows a lot.
I was angry. He just got my feathers that day big time.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This portion of the bald-faced truth is brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. Need a machinery job done right? Call High Caliber today.
I gotta ask what you were talking and thinking about this morning as you drove into work, woke up for your Monday, called a friend, saw a friend, jumped on Twitter. What was top of mind? If you're an Oregon Ducks fan, was going to Arizona State and losing a football game you probably should have won. And frankly, if I think Oregon plays Arizona State again, I would pick the Ducks to win the game. But you didn't win. Very disappointing Saturday. Was that top of mind for you? If you are somebody who watched what went on with the NFL over the weekend, is the protesting and the passionate display of unity that the NFL showed in response to President Trump's comments on Friday, was that top of mind? Tell me what you're thinking and talking about on this Monday. And as you enter this work week, we've got a great radio show for you today. But I think for me, it was mixed bag because I wake up thinking about Willie Taggart. And I wake up thinking about Oregon, which went to Arizona State and frankly just didn't get it done. And I am thinking about, well, is that just going to be what Oregon's season is going to look like? Is that what the Ducks are going to be about as this season unfolds? Or was that an aberration on Saturday? You got Willie Taggart in the post game sounding like a guy who just, you know, we had a great week of practice. We just didn't get it done. We were too sloppy. But at halftime, he sounded much differently.
Good out of joy right now.
Coach, how big was that offensive swing right there to get a touchdown towards the end of the half?
That was really big for us to get a little momentum going in the second half. And right now, the momentum on our side, now we got to take advantage of that when we come out.
Defensively, how good was the defense there in the middle part of that second quarter making stops? How big was that for your team?
Well, I think after the first couple series, then they got some things corrected and came out and did a good job stopping them. We got to get our offense going right now. We're playing undisciplined and not physical enough.
And it sounded like a hopeful coach who's like, okay, we've got this figured out, but goes into the second half and Oregon just didn't get it done. Arizona State punched them in the mouth. Arizona State outplayed them. Arizona State made the big plays and came up with big plays, and Oregon doesn't get it done. And they get their first loss of the season, and they answer a few questions for us. But at the same time, as I'm thinking about Oregon entering this Monday, the parking lot attendant, my friends, others that I'm running into all morning all want to talk about the protests in the NFL. It's dividing us and also bringing us together in a weird way. Because I don't think that on Friday, when President Trump made his comments speaking in Alabama to his supporters, I don't think he maybe intended the fallout to be unity. He's clearly trying to divide the country. He's clearly trying to say, hey, look, these guys, and he called him son of a beep, you know, those guys need to stand up or get fired. And I think what he didn't expect, or maybe he underestimated, was the passion with which the NFL players were going to respond. And I think he underestimated the owners, who have largely supported him, $7 million in campaign contributions for President Trump. And I think he underestimated the NFL and Roger Goodell coming out and joining players and joining owners and joining sort of the cause and the fans who were on the side of the players in saying that, look, this is a league that's got to be about things more than football. I like that the players have interests outside of football. I like that the players feel like they have more to offer the world than football. But I know some of you out there do not support the right of the players to protest in the NFL. And I know some of you out there think that players should be fired if they protest. I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you on what you thought of the players' response, what you thought of the NFL's response, and what you thought of peripheral people weighing in, like LeBron James weighing in on the president, talking about the divisive nature in which this president has ruled. I'm not talking about politics bleeding into sports. I'm talking about sports bleeding into politics. And I don't care what your politics are. I could probably tell in the conversation what your politics are, but I don't really think this is about politics. I think this is more about the Constitution, free speech, human will, and the galvanizing of a league that has been splintered over the years. I've never seen the NFL more unified than I did this Sunday. And I've watched the NFL as a kid growing up. I've covered the NFL as an NFL columnist. And now I'm watching the NFL again as a radio host and columnist in another market. And I looked around the league yesterday, and for the first time in my lifetime, I saw players, I saw coaches, I saw owners, and I saw a league that agreed on something. It was the first time. And I think that was an unintended byproduct of what President Trump said on Friday. Basically, he told the players, shut up and dance. And look, there are people who wrote me this morning and have tweeted at me and have said, look, if I did that in my job, I'd be fired. I think the players know that they risk some of that. I think the players knew that it wouldn't be a popular thing for them all to come out and protest, or for two teams in the same game to say, look, we're not even going to come out to the field. I think they realized that, hey, I'm running a risk here, and I might be ostracizing half of my audience by not coming out or not standing for the national anthem. But I think that they took that consequence, or the potential consequence, into consideration when making that protest and said, hey, like Colin Kaepernick, who has been pushed out of the league for being the first to protest, like Colin Kaepernick, these players are saying, look, you know, I'm going to live with this. If some guy in Woodburn or Portland or Tigard or Eugene or Klamath Falls doesn't like me because I don't stand for the national anthem, I can live with it. That's what the players are saying. So don't make any mistake. It is kind of like you. So I had a guy who wrote me this morning who said, hey, if I stood up for the national anthem or the Pledge of Allegiance at my place of work and then decided to make a protest about it, I'd risk being fired. I'd risk being ostracized. Well, guess what? So are the players. And like Jesse Owens in the face of Hitler in the Olympics in Berlin, and like Muhammad Ali in the face of a Vietnam War, and like other athletes who have stepped up in the 1968 Summer Olympics and raised a fist, these athletes are standing or sitting or choosing to sit out of the national anthem, or frankly, in a lot of cases, choosing to make a statement that isn't going to be popular with everyone. I want to know what you think of this. And I want to know if you think that this is oddly bringing us together in a way, because I know that the comments at face value are divisive. But I kind of feel like it's also bringing us closer together, because I think we're all pulling together around sports and going, is this about free speech? Is this about race? Is this about patriotism? 503-417-7575. LaShawn McCoy of the Buffalo Bills talking about President Trump.
The flag, the national anthem, means a lot, you know, to me, to my teammates. I was very bothered by the comments of our president of this country. You know, it's, as a president, you're supposed to lead us. You're supposed to bring us together. You know, you're supposed to lead this country. You know, and I can't stand, you know, and support something where our leader of this country is just acting like a jerk, you know, angry and upset about NFL players protesting in a peaceful manner.
Protesting in a peaceful manner. So I kind of feel like the protests in its infancy with Colin Kaepernick was about a country. It was about, I don't like what I'm seeing around the country. But what I heard yesterday from NFL players was that President Trump was galvanizing the players against him. And it was an attack on freedom of speech, as Von Miller of the Denver Broncos said.
We felt like President Trump's speech was an assault, you know, on our most cherished right, freedom of speech.
Josh Norman of the Washington Redskins going a step further.
When a man calls you out like that, behind the post, it's supposed to be the president of America. It's supposed to be. Calls you out like that as a group, and there's more things going on in this world. That's personal. That's coming from you. I mean, I'm all cool. You know, you give people the benefit of the doubt. But when you come at that angle in that direction, directly at you, nah, man, one brother, you mess with one, you mess with us all. Don't nobody is divided in this. We was in unity. We want to stand for something. I'm just telling you right now, this man is not welcome here in Washington, D.C. He's not. I hope he don't be around when I see him. He's not welcome. I can say that to your face. You're not welcome here.
He's not welcome in Washington, D.C., says Josh Norman. Alex Smith of the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think targeting the NFL, targeting the quality of the character of guys in this league for that very protest. And I found that very alarming. This is the same guy that couldn't condemn violent neo-Nazis. And he's condemning guys that are taking a knee during the anthem. So I find that there's bigger issues out there that he should probably be worried about.
Was it just a misfire by President Trump? Did he have something right in there? I want to kick this around. 503-417-7575. We'll take your phone calls on the national anthem, the players, and what you think this is really about. Because I think that's a question. Because I don't know if it's about patriotism. I don't know if it's about people just unhappy that President Trump got elected. But I can tell you this. The NFL players felt attacked. And it galvanized them and unified them yesterday. And I have not seen this in my lifetime. The NFL players all on the same page with one thing. And President Trump did that. 503-417-7575. Coaches galvanized. Roger Goodell came out, spoke out against Donald Trump's statement, and spoke about what the NFL stands for. Sean Payton of the New Orleans Saints said he's disappointed in the president. This is what President Trump said about standing and how players disrespect America by taking a knee.
We have a great country. We have great people representing our country, especially our soldiers, our first responders, and they should be treated with respect. And when you get on your knee and you don't respect the American flag or the anthem, that's not being treated with respect.
Are you claiming racial tensions, sir?
No, this has nothing to do with race. I've never said anything about race. This has nothing to do with race or anything else. This has to do with respect for our country and respect for our flag.
There's the president. Is he right in saying that? And did he go too far here? Because I think he miscalculated by calling out players.
I think it's very disrespectful to our flag and to our country. So I certainly think the owners should do something about it. There was great solidarity. I watched a little bit. I was not watching the games today. Believe me, I'm doing other things. But I watched a little bit, and I will say that there was tremendous solidarity for our flag and for our country.
There it is, President Trump speaking out about it. Chris Collinsworth of NBC said that the president owes an apology.
I would say he should apologize. They're not SOBs. They're smart, thoughtful guys. They really are. They've seen things that are unimaginable in some cases. And they want exactly what the president wants. They want a better America. Their version of how to get there is different than the president's. I understand that. But I guarantee you, if the president invited, I can make a list of 10 guys to the White House and heard their stories and heard their thoughts and heard how concerned they are about America, that they would find a common ground and they would move this forward. And I think an apology for the SOB comment right off the top would go a long way.
Does he owe the NFL players an apology? Let's go out to the phones, 503-417-7575. We'll start in Portland with Mark. Mark in Portland, welcome.
God, you're just depressing me. These poor multi-millionaire dollar athletes. I mean, you know what? You guys could spin this kind of any way you want right now. The president gave his opinion, in my opinion, and they're losing in ratings on ESPN when they continue to push this political. Where was all this stance for everything during the Obama administration when we had cities being burnt down over his lies about Mike Brown, hands up, don't shoot, which never happened? All the divisiveness that has occurred the last 8 to 10 years. We're tired of the politics when we turn to sports. We just want to watch the game. I don't think you're getting the whole story from some of the guys in the NFL because I think they're too afraid to speak the other side, because if you don't say what's politically correct, you know, Roselle and all the people in the NFL are going to frown upon you. You should stand for the flag. I mean, I can't even imagine doing that. Let's talk about the African-Americans that are serving our country in war. Let's talk about the black female officer who was shot and killed simply because she was in a blue uniform in New York. Let's talk to her family members when we want to talk about oppressed people. Kaepernick grew up in a above middle class family. He's never seen the middle class. None of these guys have. They're living the ultimate dream of our lives, and it is disrespectful. So you got the president giving his opinion. Whether you agree with it or not, that's obviously up to you. I quite frankly think they should stand for the flag.
Mark, you know? Mark, and you're not alone. I think about half of the audience agrees with you. But let me ask you this. Let's go back. I mean, you make the point like you want the sports and the politics to be separated.
Absolutely.
Jesse Owens in Berlin. That was a political thing. Muhammad Ali in Vietnam. You grew up watching that.
Right. I thought Muhammad Ali made a stance that I understood what he was doing. I really don't understand what these players are doing. I don't understand what Kaepernick's doing when he makes comments about he hates America. And that's I don't want to hear that when I turn on football. I just want to watch the game. I want to talk about Marcus Mariota beating the Seahawks. I don't want to talk about all this political stuff today.
I don't think you're alone either, because I think a lot of people would like the athletes to stick to sports. I wonder, though, if this was a political statement on Sunday. I know Colin Kaepernick's statement was political. I know that he says, hey, I'm looking at America and I'm thinking about people that didn't grow up in middle class households. I think the statement yesterday was more about the president telling the players to shut up. He said shut up and they said no, we won't. And by the way, that galvanized them. Was it a political statement yesterday, or was it the NFL going, don't tell us what to do? Don't tell us to shut up. Because I felt like it was more of a free speech constitution moment for me yesterday as I saw teams, you know, because it was the trigger. Friday was the trigger where he said, shut up and play or get fired. That's what he said. And I think that's what triggered yesterday, because we didn't see whole teams that were refusing to come out for the anthem. We didn't see the mass protesting. We didn't have a Major League Baseball player who took a knee until President Trump said, you know what, shut up. I kind of feel like it was a constitutional moment. It was players going, hey, hold, you're our president and you're telling us to be quiet? You tell me what you saw. 503-417-7575. Let's go to Mark in Beaverton. Mark, welcome.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Going well.
You you kind of hit the nail on the head what I was going to say with, I don't think it necessarily was a 100% political statement. I think a couple of the guys that were taking knees that have been doing it since last year, you know, did it anyways. I think it was solidarity against that comment that Trump said. My big thing, and I even asked my dad this the other night because we got into a conversation about this a couple weeks ago about people taking knees. And I asked him, and I would love to ask all of you guys, do you guys stand when the national anthem's played when you're watching the football game?
In the press box, in the press box, we do, because we're in the stadium.
But at home, no. all these people at home, no. So what are you getting all up in arms because these guys are unified in what they are trying to get across? Hey, Trump, you can't tell us what to do. Yes, you're our president, but you're not going to tell me to shut up and sit down and be quiet if I feel like I'm right.
Yeah.
I would do the same thing if Trump called me, Mark in Beaverton, I need you to shut up and stop talking. I would tell him, no, I have free speech.
Yeah, and I think that's where he misfired. As the president of the free world, he was saying, you're not all the way free. And I think that's really where he miscalculated. And the last thing, like, it was really, you know, social suicide to call out the NFL players. Has he not been paying attention to the NFL Players Association, the NBA Players Association, how powerful those entities are? Like, if the players are galvanized in anything, it's, hey, we're in this together. And if he's telling one of us to shut up, or some of us to shut up, he's telling all of us to shut up. To me, it was more a free speech issue than it was a political statement about America. Josh is in Eugene, listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Josh, welcome.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I 100% agree with you. It is absolutely a free speech issue. You know, and anybody who's played any organized sports whatsoever knows that in a locker room, that's like a family. And, you know, I think that it was showing solidarity for their family. You know, when he called out those players that were kneeling, it was less about the subject matter and more about sticking up for their brothers in the locker room. And, you know, I know that a lot of people who have been against the kneeling, they were come out in support of the one Steelers player who went out. I guarantee you he's not very popular in that locker room because he went rogue against the team and what they voted for. You know, and I just think that this is the bigger issue is being called a name by the President of the United States and being called out by him. That's just something that didn't sit well. I think anybody would be mad if they were called out a name and called out by any sort of authority figure for something that they had the right to do.
Yeah, I think the guy in Pittsburgh you're talking about is Alejandro Villanueva. He chose to stand alone. He is an Army Ranger, former Army Ranger, and he's got a great story. I do think the guys in his locker room probably know what he went through, know his position, and that it is more complicated for him. He's got more than one team to think about. But I think the players would support that, because at the same time that the president, it's kind of like he's making the argument for the players, isn't he? He's saying, you know, if you're not on board with this, you're disrespecting our country, you should shut up and play or be fired. Shut up, you know, stand up or be fired. Well, Villanueva's in that locker room. I'm sure there was a conversation with his teammates. It's been well documented, what, you know, his story and what he's been through. And him coming just to stand just outside the locker room, I think, was middle ground for him. He's honoring America while honoring his teammates. Let's go to Daniel and Tiger. Daniel, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I agree with you on the free speech stance. A couple of thoughts on it, though, are as a business, which is ultimately what the NFL is. I mean, the guys are being paid to be there in uniform. What organization would allow their employees in uniform at work to have their political, you know, stance be acceptable? I get that they have their intentions, and I like to believe that they're, you know, that they're right, but is that really the time or place to do it? And then I'd like to know, you know, what are these athletes doing outside of the game time? You know, are they actively doing anything on their own time that actually is representing their stance and what they're trying to accomplish?
Yeah, I think that those are fair questions. I also think that, you know, we should be careful in saying that because these guys are representing the NFL and they're in uniform, they shouldn't have views that are outside of sports. I would caution people there. I think you're entitled to have views. The NFL has to decide if that's something that they want to punish you for. Leave it here. Go to Twitter. Darren on Twitter says, I 100% support freedom of speech and a peaceful protest, but I keep hearing the protest isn't about the anthem or the flag. Then why use the anthem and the flag for the protest? I think it's a good question. But I think the big thing is that it got attention. And Colin Kaepernick got attention. And it got people talking about it. And as other players realized, as President Trump spoke out that he was telling them to shut up and dance, they got pissed about it. I think they're angry. I think they did a, oh yeah. And I think it was a misfire by the president in that way. And I don't think it's as much about politics as it is about players and athletes like Steph Curry, who said, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going to the White House. And the president said, well, then you're not invited. He was like a guy who asked somebody to the prom, and then she said, huh, I don't know. I might have to wash my hair. And he goes, oh, you're not invited. That's what it was like. 503-417-7575. Zach's in Springfield, Oregon. Zach, welcome.
Hey, thanks, John. First time, long time listener.
Thank you.
You know, I'm just kind of disappointed with so much of the reaction from the people who are super against this kind of protest, because I heard one of the callers in the last couple minutes say, I don't understand it, but I hate it. And that type of stance is really confusing to me and frustrating to me, because if you don't understand it, how can you voice such a strong opinion? And I think it's so much more about messaging within all this. I like what you said, that so much was in a response to Trump telling them to basically shut up. It's just disappointing, because a lot of Trump's messaging has had to do with has had not to do with exactly what he said, but how he's saying it and who he's directing things towards. And it's just frustrating to me to hear so many people say they're disappointed and they hate it and let football be football, and you're such a privilege to play a game, yet this is their platform, and they've earned so many of these rights that they have, and they're American citizens just like anybody else. So really, I'm just disappointed with hate without understanding.
I think that's fair, and I don't think anybody's going to disagree. Who could disagree with that? I feel like President Trump put the owners of the NFL teams in an impossible position, and Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the league, in an impossible position. Many of you on Twitter who are tweeting at me are saying, well, what were the owners and the league supposed to say? They had to come out in support of the players. I don't know if they had to, because haven't the NFL owners and coaches sort of voted by not signing Colin Kaepernick that, hey, this guy was a distraction? Well, now what's the distraction? It actually isn't a distraction. Now it's galvanized. It makes me think that Colin Kaepernick, if he can still play, might just be picked up by somebody in the wake of this. A team willing to go, you know what? We're going to be the ultimate. And I said it a couple weeks ago. I think a day's coming where free agents in the NBA and the NFL make their decisions on where they don't want to play, not by market size or, hey, I'm going to get touches there, but by looking at the owner and going, hey, my ideology is not the same as Dan Gilbert's in Cleveland. I'm not going to go play in Cleveland. I don't think that day is far off. I think it's coming, like next summer in the NBA. I think we're going to see players who say, you know what, I don't want to play for that owner because my politics don't line up with his. I think there's going to be a shift. I think this is the new norm. I think the protesting around the anthem is not going away. But I don't think Sunday was about people saying, hey, Black America's oppressed, or I feel oppressed. I think Sunday were the NFL players in the league going, don't tell us what to say or think. Don't tell us to stick to football. And I kind of shake my head, too, at people who are like, well, I just want this to be about sports. Jesse Owens, Berlin, in the face of Hitler. Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, the 1968 Olympics, a black fist raised. It's always been sports and politics. These things have walked hand in hand. I don't think it was a political statement. Let's go out to the phone. Sean's in Salem. Sean, where do you stand?
I think it's interesting that, we're going to see whether or not the public will support them with ratings. I think this is the NFL, I think it's their final nail in the coffin as far as, you know, a lot of us are concerned. Because, you know, there's a lot of things you can protest. I get it. You leave the flag and the anthem alone. I get it. The president can be a pinhead. He says stupid things. But no one cares, really, about what they're thinking. I mean, this was Trump was childish. No offense. The players are just as childish right now. You got millionaires pouting. It's ridiculous. So a lot of us, they have the right to freedom of speech. We have the right to turn off the control.
Will you stop watching because of this? Or were you watching the anthem anyway? I mean, did you notice before?
You know, I when I'm at a game, I'll stand up. They don't really play the anthem on TV. You know, I know that's up a couple times. You don't see it. So that's kind of, to me, it's like, come on, don't be stupid. You know, if it's playing, you can stand up. But they never play it on NFL Sundays. At least I've never seen it.
Yeah.
Or watching. Yeah, I mean, I think it's hypocritical that you got a bunch of millionaires that are protesting injustice. I mean, come on.
I don't think yesterday was about injustice. I think yesterday was the president told them to shut up and dance, and they said, no, we won't. I think it was more of a standoff against the White House than it was a statement on America. Because if it were a statement on America, why wasn't it going on in mass before this Sunday?
Well, you're going to find out whether most of America agrees with what happened or doesn't agree by the ratings in the next couple weeks. I mean, the proof will be in the pudding. If ratings go down, I bet you they'll be out there saluting the flag and singing the anthem again.
Appreciate the phone call from Sean in Salem. See, and that's what this show is about. On Twitter, AJ says, thinking that NFL players are protesting the flag is like thinking Rosa Parks was protesting public transportation. Statement made. Let's go to Bob, who is in Portland. Bob, welcome.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm well.
Hey, back in March, you were doing a show, and right during the middle of the show, you made a quick little comment. You said, oh, Trump just fired Comey. And at that point in time, you said you made a choice about being a political station or not being a political station, what we can talk about. Well, yesterday was Trump's Pearl Harbor to you, because now you're in the mess.
I know.
Now, Trump has gone out. See, this is what people... Your show is going to be very interesting all day, because I bet you're going to see everything's going to be on party lines. Those people who were all against this protest, I bet you they voted for the guy, and vice versa. But, you know, the thing that I don't think people understand, or at least for me, if this had been the first statement that Trump had made, divisive about anything, we would have kind of said, okay, that's his thing. But the totality of his comments, it just keeps getting worse and worse. And now he's brought in the sports aspect of it, and he's the only guy I know can make Goodell look good. So, he's making the guy from North Korea look good. He's making Putin look good, and we don't understand why he's doing it. So, you know, they have a right. I think you are correct that he's trying to say shut up, but at the same time, it's like, we've had enough of you. You shut up.
Yeah, and I think that it's like people have said it's childish. I think that it is very simple. In that way, and that he's saying shut up, and they're saying no, we won't. And we've all heard that argument. John's in Van, and right, and he's the caller's right. I have not wanted this show to be a political show. Last night on KGW Sports Sunday, I came into the show and I was like, well, what are we going to do here? And they were like, we kind of have to address it. John's in Vancouver. John, welcome.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to say, I completely agree with the players on this one. You know, they were standing against the White House. This was their way of saying, we have a platform. If we choose to use it, we will use it. Not all of them do use it. Some of them have been kneeling since last year, yes. But I believe the fact that they all stood in solidarity on this was just amazing. And everyone who says all these overpaid crybabies need to shut up and just play football, that's disgusting. A lot of these guys came from poor backgrounds and know what it's like to be on the other side. Yes, they're millionaires now, but none of these guys are privileged with being millionaires. They earned this. They fought for this right. No one was just handed an NFL contract. They fought and grind and earned this right to play in the NFL.
Yeah, and here's the thing. The NFL's got to figure out what it wants to do. Aaron Fentress next.
You want experts? We have them. The writers who know what's what. The people in the know. The A-Team on the Beavers and Ducks.
Touchdown, Beavers!
Touchdown, Freeman!
Brought to you by Bricks Tavern.
Oregon is home this Saturday against Cal. On Saturday night, I was in Arizona in the desert. It was a good time. I flew in. I got sunshine. I saw, Camelback. I saw the desert. It was an 85-degree day. And the Ducks then suited up and played a football game that, wasn't their best game. 14 penalties. Weird play selection. Quarterback Justin Herbert, not his best night throwing the football. And Oregon got beat. It answered a question. They're not back. Aaron Fentress of Comcast Sportsnet Northwest is with us. Aaron, what was the biggest takeaway you took from Oregon's loss on Saturday?
For me, that the red flags that were all over the first three games in terms of opponents turned out to be real when they faced a reasonably good offense with some athletes on defense or a team that had those two things. They met some resistance they couldn't overcome. And the fact that the penalty situation is kind of alarming. I actually just posted a story on CSNW.com about this is by far the most turnovers per game they've averaged since I could find records back to 2000. And they're at 10.5. And, talking to Taggart, he says, we have some talent. We're good, but we're not good enough to overcome shooting ourselves in the foot. And in the first half, they had four false start penalties in the first half. And they only scored seven real points in the first half. That second touchdown came off a muff punt. They never would have gotten that touchdown if not for the gift at the 11-yard line. So when you're shooting yourself in the foot like that, that's a lot to overcome with Charles Nelson and I, with no Darren Carrington, with a very young team. So that's what I came away with. It's a very talented team. I think they're on the right trajectory next year or the year after. But they're young, they're undisciplined, they're inexperienced, and they cannot overcome shooting themselves in the foot like that and win close games.
Justin Herbert, let's grade him for the game. Passing the football, running the football, what's his grade?
I thought, I still give him a B+ because there was a ton of drop balls. And when you're thrown into negative situations with false starts, when you instead of first and 10 and running whatever play you ran, you're first and 15, or you might, have a good play and it gets called back for a holding penalty, those aren't on him. So when you look at all the penalties they had in that game and how aggressive ASU was, the fact that he threw for 281 and three touchdowns with no picks and a bunch of drops, I think he played pretty well. Now, at the very end, he couldn't pull it out. But again, it's my understanding from, talking to people that there were a lot of miscues on those last two drives. They had some penalties, they had some drop balls, they had some missed assignments, guys not lining up properly. Again, it comes back to that youth. So I'm going to give my man Herbert a break. And I'm a big Herbert guy. I'll admit that. But I thought, all told, he played pretty well.
Are you saying you have a man crush on Justin Herbert?
I think I pretty much said that the first time he took a snap and I saw him. I was like, oh, my God, this kid's going to be amazing. And I just admit it. He's my new Dennis Dixon crush.
Let's go back. I mean, as a starter, I think other than the Utah game at Utah where he throws the touchdown pass to Darren Carrington at the end, we haven't seen him win a game in which, he has to go out and win the game in the last two minutes.
In the fourth quarter.
Yeah,
right.
We haven't seen that except the Utah game. Is that a question he still has to answer?
Of course, definitely. But he's only had two or three opportunities because last year they were getting routed. Well, I take that back. There's been a handful. The Cal game, he had a chance in overtime. But he brought him back in that game but threw the pick in overtime. So, I think that definitely is a question that has to be answered about him. But I just at this point wouldn't put it on him because he's not – other than that Cal interception, he's not coughing the game up. And even in that game, he threw six touchdowns. The defense gave up too many points for him to overcome. So I give him a mulligan on that or a benefit of the doubt on that because I think it's there, but you have to have some help.
Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet Northwest. If they played Arizona State again, who do you pick to win the game?
I pick Oregon again. I mean, I would assume they wouldn't have as many penalties. They actually committed 17. but three were declined. That's a funky number when you look at it. 17 penalties is insane. So I would pick them to win again, especially at home, definitely. But if it was at ASU, I would still pick them to win because I think they're the better team. I just think they just destroyed themselves.
They get Cal this weekend. Oregon still has statistically one of the best offenses in America with points scored, and they run into Justin Wilcox. What do you expect happens when strength against strength there?
You know, if I'm Wilcox and he's run different schemes as a defensive coordinator, he's done different things to people. I try and duplicate what Arizona State did. I try and make Oregon uncomfortable, and that's by bringing pressure. And one of the things we saw, and this is one of the things I talked about all offseason and during the first few games, is when the game is tough and it's 3rd and 12, 3rd and whatever, and the team's bringing heat, your receivers can't just be athletic and fast and catch the ball. They have to get where they're supposed to get to on time. And that's a huge factor in being a receiver. And Carrington was that guy. Nelson was that guy. And there were a lot of plays in that game at ASU where they took shots deep because ASU was committing players to the box and trying to bring pressure, and they missed them. Like, they missed a ton of deep balls that were there. Like there was a few where Herbert threw the post, and the guy ran a go. Herbert threw a go, and the guy ran a post. You know what I mean? Or just overthrew somebody, or just underthrew somebody. That happened a lot in that game. So if I'm Cal, I'm saying these young receivers are not going to beat it if we put pressure on Herbert. And so I think it's going to be an interesting game. I think Oregon should win. I think it's going to be a good game.
I think we're going to see a lot of those games where, like, Arizona State or Cal, certainly later in the year, Arizona and Oregon State, where we go, Oregon should win this game, but we're going to go, let's see what happens.
Exactly.
It's going to drive people crazy, isn't it?
If you have gross expectations, you know, it's funny because a 3-0 start, some people think, wow, we're back. We're ranked for 3-0. Look at us. And so if you think that way, and I saw some people on Twitter who were freaking out, and I'm like, really? Like, you're freaking out over this? You honestly thought that what you saw the first three games meant this was going to be a contender? But if you go into this season with the mindset, okay, there's a new coaching staff with a young team. They got some good recruits coming in. You got to give it time to marinate, and you just enjoy the process. Enjoy the process of watching this team grow. I think you'll be fine. If you're expecting 9 or 10 wins, you're going to be very disappointed.
Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sportsnet Northwest. He joins us weekly exclusively here. Let me go down the schedule. You tell me win or loss, okay? You ready?
Okay.
They get Cal at home.
Can I put that in a question mark?
Yeah. Question mark is fine. Washington State at home after that.
Loss.
At Stanford.
Question mark.
At UCLA.
Question mark.
Utah at home.
Loss.
At Washington.
Loss.
Arizona at home.
Win.
Oregon State at home.
Win.
A lot of question marks in there in a couple of wins.
I'm waffling. I think those are all toss-ups.
Are they a
bowl? I really truly do.
Are they a bowl?
I didn't think Utah is kind of a toss-up, but I'll give them a loss.
Are they a bowl team?
Yes. They will get to 6. They will win half of those question marks at least and get to 6. 7, maybe 7, 8.
What area can they most improve?
The penalties. Those can be cleaned up. Those have to be fixed. If they can get those down to some kind of reasonable number, like 6 or 7 a game, I think that helps them a lot because they just can't put themselves, in the hole like that. And I think also maybe some of these young receivers can turn the corner, like in 2014 when guys turned the corner after a few games, then I think they have a good chance. But other than that, I think they are what they are.
I love this season because – like, do you remember you and I would go to the games, we drive down to the game, we knew they were going to win, and Chip Kelly was coaching, they were going to blow out whoever they were playing that day, and it was almost boring. They were so good, it was boring. I like this better, that they show up and we're like, I don't know.
I'm with you 100%, and it was like that through 2014, really. The 2015 season was one of the more fascinating seasons I've ever covered. That was the 9-4 Vernon Adams season because you just didn't know. Like, Vernon was a mystery. The whole team was a mystery. I'm from a journalist standpoint, you know, Ken Go, the great Ken Go from the Oregonian, 40 years there. You told me a long time ago, I said, what do you root for? He says, I root for the best story. Yeah. And now that I've gotten older as a reporter, and I used to just root for, like, I want my team to go to the biggest games I can cover it. Now, like, sometimes losing is a better story. You know, I'm not rooting for losing. I'm rooting for the best story. And the best story right now is going to be an NFL-like flip-a-coin season for these Ducks, from my perspective. Fans are going to go crazy, but I'm going to love it.
What was Willie Taggart's demeanor like after the loss?
He was pretty calm, cool, collected with us. He actually wasn't much different than he's been after wins. He just simply said, We can't turn the ball over. We can't have these miscues. It kills our pace. It kills our tempo. We're not good enough to win games like this. We have to fix this. We have to do a better job as coaches teaching technique. He didn't seem overly dejected or anything like that. I think he seemed like a guy who knows what his team's about. You know, I think if you pinned him down, you know, and publicly he's going to say, I want to win the conference. I think if you pin him down and say, okay, realistically, gun to the head, how many games are you going to win? I think he would say this is the type of game where it's going to be close and we have to fight to win these types of games.
I think it's such an interesting year. He's got some talent. We're kind of feeling him out. On the defensive side of the ball, they looked vulnerable for really the first time. And I look back and I go, okay, maybe Nebraska showed us some of that in the second half of that game. But Arizona State had a decent offense and moved the ball on him.
And a mobile quarterback who extended some plays. And they got four sacks, I think three from Jalen Jelks. But he avoided what would have been multiple sacks for multiple guys in that game with his feet. And so then that puts the secondary. And we talked about this before the game last week. That puts the secondary in a little bit of trouble because now you have to cover for longer. You have young guys back then. So, and the defense is a work in progress too. I mean, they were 128th in the nation last year, 42 points per game allowed. That's tough to turn around overnight. And Levin's going to need some time to, one, get a system in place, and, two, develop some of these young guys. Because they're still pretty young on defense. I think right now there's only Tyree Robinson, Hodgkins, and Mondu, and Pagano, who's barely playing. They only really impact seniors. The rest of the guys you're playing are all going to be back next year, and most of them back even the year after that. So it's a work in progress.
Aaron Fentress, he joins us on this show. Fentress, thank you. I will see you.
Sounds good. Bye.
All right, there he is. What'd you think of this? Tweet at me, at John Canzano BFT. Tell me what you think Oregon's biggest concern is after the Arizona State game. I've got mine, and it's not even something we talked about. I'll share it coming up next. Plus, you want to hear the game? We'll play it for you.
Something is about to happen.
BFT.
Now listen up, everyone.
Let's go. The bald-faced truth.
John Canzano.
I gotta say, I love him most of the time. I think he's right on.
He's okay.
John's great.
He's a little unusual.
Live every afternoon, 12 to 3 p.m.
I hate that guy because he just never knows what he's talking about.
I think he does a damn good job.
That's my dude, man. Yeah, I know him, man. I let my mother listen to him.
Now, from the Pac West Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This portion of the Bald-Faced Truth is brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. Need a machinery job done right? Call High Caliber today.
Thank you, Alabama Adriana, for that. The Oregon game. Here's the thing that bothered me the most about the loss. Not just they lost the game. We all kind of suspected there'd be days like that. And I think if they play Arizona State again, they'd probably win the game. I'd pick them to win the game. But here's the thing that bothered me. Justin Herbert on the read option. I get that that's the offense. But I want the ball in the fourth quarter in the hands of Royce Freeman. I want the ball if they're running. If they're passing, I don't want Freeman throwing the ball. I want Freeman running the ball. And if they're passing, I want Herbert throwing the ball. But I don't want Herbert running the ball. And on a critical fourth quarter possession in which they went three and out, Herbert ran the ball twice on the read option. And I know he rushed for the touchdown later, but it bothered me from a couple of standpoints. One, I don't like a guy who's not their best runner carrying the football in a critical possession, even if that's what the offense is dictated by, run a different play. I want the ball in Royce Freeman's hands, especially when he's averaging 4.5 yards a carry. And two, if Justin Herbert gets hurt, I don't think they make a bowl game. So I think they're jeopardizing everything by having him carry the football 14, 15 times in this game. Royce Freeman had 5 more carries than the quarterback running the football. That's criminal. You're going to get the guy hurt, and that's not your best offensive performance if Royce Freeman has only 5 more carries than Justin Herbert. All right, and it raises a question that we answer every Monday, and you have a chance to win a $50 gift card to Reverend's Barbecue. You can line up right now at 503-417-7575 and tell us who got smoked.
It's time for Who Got Smoked. It was a wild weekend, and we want to hear who you think had it bad. Let us know who got smoked. Powered by Reverend's Barbecue in Selwood, home of the Sandwich and Session Special. Call 417-7575. Today's top submission will win a $50 gift card to Reverend's Barbecue.
All right, let it rip. You want to eat at Reverend's Barbecue? And by the way, I had a tasty chicken sandwich from Reverend's Barbecue just today for lunch. You want to have the opportunity to go to Reverend's Barbecue and bring some friends? You can line up right now at 417-7575 in the 503 area code, and you can weigh in. We will pick the best submission for Who Got Smoked. We'll also go around the room a little bit while we wait for you to call in. Here's who I think got smoked over the weekend. I think the Seattle Seahawks got smoked over the weekend. And it was a much closer game in score than maybe it was in watching it. But the Seattle Seahawks lose to Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans in another game in which Mariota was terrific and his team wins. And the Seahawks look bad on defense. They have no run defense. Their defense got smoked. The offensive line of the Seattle Seahawks also got smoked. Could not defend and protect Russell Wilson. And it was this domino effect. It was like cyclical because they couldn't stay on the field as an offense because they couldn't protect Russell Wilson. And they couldn't get off the field as a defense. And every time I tune into this game, the Seattle Seahawks are on defense and backpedaling against a run game for the Tennessee Titans that just ran all over them. I'm not eligible to win the Reverend's Barbecue gift card, but you are. So call in right now at 503-417-7575 and tell me who got smoked. We've got lines open, so grab them right now. We normally do this right off the top of the show on Mondays, but we're doing it here because we spent so much time talking about kneeling. So tell me who got smoked. The Ducks defensive backs get smoked? Did the Ducks get smoked? I'll tell you who didn't get smoked this weekend. Maybe that's what I should do. Who didn't get smoked? Oregon State. They had a bye. They didn't play. And for the first week of this college football season, definitively, you can say Oregon State did not get smoked. I'll tell you who else didn't get smoked. The Trailblazers, who are starting their media day, also known as marketing day, today by announcing that they're in great shape, that they're mentally prepared, that they're focused on the season. The Blazers did not get smoked. They haven't played a game yet. Did the Knicks get smoked in the Carmelo Anthony trade? I don't think they got smoked either. Because the Knicks got what they needed to get out of that trade, which was a little bit of future compensation from Oklahoma City and a little bit of right now compensation. They had no leverage whatsoever. They knew Carmelo Anthony was going to sit out come Monday. I told you that last week, that Carmelo's camp was already telling me that they were not prepared to go to training camp. And Carmelo was going to be a huge distraction. So now we go to you. Who got smoked? Mark in Beaverton, you get the first crack. Who got smoked?
All right, cool, John. So I thought you were going to take my thunder when you said Seattle Seahawks. I'm going to drill down even further. I'm going to say Richard Sherman got smoked. I've been listening to NFL football for decades. I cannot remember the last time a player got hit with three separate penalties.
Richard,
the player himself.
Yeah, he looked bad, and he's paying for the fact that defensively they're just not the same. It was a strength once upon a time, and now they can't get off the field, and they're picking on Sherman. Mark and Beaverton's on record. Mark, you are the leader in the clubhouse. Richard Sherman got smoked. Mariota did the smoking. Let's go. Stay in Beaverton. Mitch in Beaverton. Mitch, who got smoked?
I think the other running back receivers for the Ducks. Taj Griffith broke a runoff in that game for like 50 yards and got called back with a penalty, and it didn't seem like they ever went back to him again. And I think I agree with you, Royce Freeman should be running the ball when we need to run the ball, but if we're going to do anything with the other guys, like dump off passes to maybe Benoit or Taj Griffith, I think they're the losers. They're the ones that got smoked. They were underutilized this game, and they need to figure out that those guys got breakaway talent. Especially Taj Griffith, thanks.
All right, hold on. We're going to put you on hold. And when you call in, don't just jump off the phone lines after you're eligible to win. You're in the conversation. Let's go to Paul in Vancouver. Paul, who got smoked?
Oh, Josh Rosen got smoked. he got smoked so bad. He wanted to go to Stanford. That was his dream school. And UCLA has now been trounced 10 times in a row. And Rosen goes to Stanford. And he's got to be thinking, this has got to be it. This is the time. Stanford's down. They're not playing well. And something happened. I mean, think about it. Something happens to Crist, and he gets an injury in his head, and all of a sudden, Shaw puts in KJ Costello, and who's the best quarterback on that field that night?
Yeah.
Well, maybe Rosen, but Costello came out of nowhere and just one could easily say that Rosen got smoked because Costello was the better player, maybe. But either way, poor Josh Rosen could not overcome another defeat.
Yeah, and I thought Rosen, look, he had two interceptions in the game, but he also threw for 480 yards, you know, against Stanford. But you're right, like the UCLA defense could not contain Stanford. Stanford put 58 points. He says Josh Rosen got smoked. What do you say? Frankie's in Portland. Frankie.
Hey, I was going to say the Oakland Raiders offensive line, but honestly, the whole team was just terrible last night. Carr got sacked, I would say it was like five times.
Yeah.
Defense couldn't do anything. Marshawn Lynch couldn't do anything. I mean, it was terrible. They made Washington look like a Super Bowl contender.
It was like 7 minutes to go in the game. I looked up. The Raiders had five first downs. It was bad. Frankie in Portland says the Raiders got smoked. Just when you buy into the Raiders, they lay an egg. Will is in Portland. Will, who got smoked?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on, Will.
Yeah, John, love the show. Hey, I got a twofer in one game. I'm going to go with the Bears player on the one-yard line slowing down before the end zone.
Yeah.
He got smoked by that Steeler. And then I'm going to pick the Steelers in that same game. They got smoked. Plain and simple. That's it, John. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to put you on hold. I saw that highlight in Marcus Cooper. It wasn't even 1 yard. He was inches before scoring a touchdown. He goes hot dog or Leon Lett. And what hustle. Don't celebrate till you get in the end zone. I bet he was thinking, am I gonna do the urinating dog celebration? What am I gonna do? Am I gonna you know roll the ball like it's a grenade? What am I gonna do? And whatever you do, you can't do that. You can't stop celebrating too early and blowing a touchdown on a big return. Marcus Cooper, you lose the football. Let's go to Andy and Eugene. Andy listening on Fox Sports Eugene. Andy, welcome.
Thank you. Hey, hard for me to admit it, but my Pittsburgh Steelers run defense got smoked this weekend.
Yeah.
Over 200 yards rushing to the Chicago Bears.
Bears are bad. That's not a great team over the last decade.
No, and you got Mike Glennon at quarterback, so it's kind of like, what do you think they're going to do? And then they win the game on a 20-yard rushing touchdown.
Yep.
Which is just horrible. I mean, I was shocked. There was a bad holding call that was not called. It was completely blatant that let Howard get into the end zone. But we never should have even have been to that point.
No, and here's the bottom line. If Marcus Cooper just holds on to that football and gets into the end zone, that game doesn't even go to overtime. Pittsburgh disappointed me. I had Pittsburgh down as one of my true contenders at the beginning of the year, but after that loss, I kind of have to go, because you can win games with bad defense. Tom Brady proved that. But you can't win a Super Bowl or get an AFC or NFC title with a bad defense. All right, let's go around the room. We've got Franklin who says the Raiders got smoked. We've got Will who said that Marcus Cooper and the Pittsburgh Steelers got smoked. We got Andy who said Pittsburgh got smoked. We got Mitch who says Taj got smoked in the Oregon Ducks game. Where's your vote, Bliss?
I was going to go with Frankie because that would have been my choice, the Raiders. But I think Will is correct. That guy, how could you pull that off? You've seen it too many times. How could you not just go to the end zone and then celebrate?
Adriana, quickly, do you have a vote here?
I agree with Bliss.
All right. Will in Portland, congratulations. You're going to Reverend's Barbecue. Congrats, Will.
Hey, thanks.
All right. Who are you taking?
My lovely girlfriend.
There you go. I'm going to put you on hold. Adriana will get your information. Thanks for everybody who played. We'll continue this every Monday as part of Who Got Smoked. Coming up, you're going to hear the Ducks-Arizona State game in like 4 minutes. I want to call your attention to Better Call Saul. BetterCrawlSpaces.com. That is John's Waterproofing's website. And if you go to BetterCrawlSpaces.com, you can find out all about what John's Waterproofing does. John's Waterproofing is the local expert for everything basement-y. Basement finishing, mold problems, crawl space repair. Look, it's cold and rainy one week, it's warm another, but don't let that fool you. You do not want moisture in your crawl space. You don't want moisture underneath your house. BetterCrawlSpaces.com or 877-526-8141. All right, coming up, we are going to play this Brian Griggs feature. Brian Griggs, for people who don't know, is the production guru here at Alpha Media, and he does a great job on this show doing all the imaging and all the production. If you are somebody who enjoys hearing the Oregon Ducks games, win or lose, Griggs puts together this highlight montage that basically gives you the game in a nutshell. And if you are somebody who watched the Oregon-Arizona State game, and if you're somebody who loves highlight calls and loves good music, Brian Griggs does a terrific job putting these things together. We're going to play that coming up here in a minute. Later in the show, Liz Clark, she writes for the Washington Post. She had a great piece on what's going on in the NFL. And I know it has a lot of people fired up. And I know a lot of people don't want to talk about national anthem. They want to talk about football. But I think when the players make the national anthem the discourse of the weekend and make it like a focal point of the weekend, we kind of have to address it. We kind of have to deal with it. In the same way that, you know, we deal with other things, we're going to pick it up. We're going to talk about it. We're going to examine it. I want to know what you think. I'm never going to tell you to shut up. And I want to know what you think about this. Austin's in Salmon Creek. He's been holding for a while. He wants to talk about it. Austin, what's up?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I just had a couple quick thoughts about, the protests against, obviously Donald Trump or police brutality. That's where it started with Colin Kaepernick. I thought for the entirety of the demonstrations that, yes, it's bringing attention to, overall situations, but at the same time, their message is being skewed. Their message is being skewed in a way that people are taking it, that they're protesting against the national anthem. And if you continually protest in a certain way and it continues to be askew and the thought process from the other side continues to be askew, I think that in unintentional consequence is that their message is lost. Again, Colin Kaepernick protesting against police brutality, which is definitely a thing in our country. We can all just admit that. But with that being said, everybody that I speak to on an opposite side take it to mean that he's, against the national anthem. So
yeah.
Why is it these protests don't take place directly outside of the White House? Why is it that when people have a bye week, why are they not protesting directly outside of the White House or directly outside of a tailgate before they end up at the game? That would bring an extreme amount of attention, in my opinion, to the exact message that they're trying to convey.
Here's the thing, Austin, I'm going to cut you off there because I think your point's made. But I also, here's the thing. I don't think yesterday was about police brutality. I don't think at its inception it was about police brutality. I don't think it was about oppression. I think yesterday was a case of a group of players, NFL players, who were moved to protest because the president on Friday said to them, shut up and dance. And I don't, shut up and play or you're going to be fired. And I think the owners were put in an impossible position where they went, we can no longer tell our players, Jim Irsay, the Colts said this, I can no longer tell our players not to make a political statement while wearing a uniform. He was moved. Commissioner Roger Goodell was moved. The players were moved. And I think the reason why they protest in the games is it's getting attention. And it's the national anthem. And I think yesterday's protest by NFL players was largely rooted in free speech and the Constitution and minimally rooted in the ideas that Colin Kaepernick initially started with. I do think you've seen some players come out and speak openly and freely about what they think is wrong. Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith, the Chiefs. I think you've had other guys like Drew Brees who have come out and said, look, I agree with what these guys are saying, but I can't kneel during the national anthem because I feel like I should stand during the national anthem. I wonder what you would do, put in that position. 503-417-7575. If I put you in that position and I say to you, all right, the world is watching you, because that's what it is. Performance day, stage day, the live performance is typically in the NFL on Sunday. All right, everybody's watching. The president just said you shouldn't kneel. You can bet that most of us would kneel just because the president said you shouldn't kneel. It's their voice. It's their platform. That's why they're doing it as close to the games as possible. At home, you're probably not even watching the national anthem. The television broadcast isn't even showing it because they're showing commercials. They can make money on the commercials. They don't make money on the national anthem in television. And I'll tell you, at games, in the press box, we all stand. We stand for God Bless America. We stand for the national anthem. And we put our hands over our hearts. The people who are eating at the press buffet stop eating. Conversations stop. Everybody stands up. And I don't know if anybody in the media chooses to sit during the anthem during these games. And if they do, I've always felt like, you know, who cares if you're sitting or I'm sitting? But people care if NFL players are sitting or kneeling or not showing up. Dre's in Portland. Go ahead, Dre.
Jay, so if I go to a NASCAR event and there's a whole bunch of Confederate flags flying, should we fire those people too and walk out? I'm just saying. I mean, I don't get it. Does anybody remember Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf?
Yep.
Remember what he used to do?
Yep.
Why is it now a story? And you said this a while back. Why do we still even play the anthem at the game? For some of us, it's just a habit. I'm watching a Timber game yesterday. People are videotaping what's happening on the field. They're not even looking at the flag.
Yeah, I kind of think that, and people are going to get mad at me for this, Dre, but I kind of think it's played out and it cheapens it when we play it at everything.
Play it at the movies. How come we don't play it at the movies? That's entertainment, too. That's basically what the dude said. He said, shut up and entertain us.
Yeah.
Stop saying those people. Come out and say what you really want to say. Call me black. Call me the N-word or whatever it is. Say what you want to say. Don't say that. Those people start talking about heritage. Don't that brings up when you start talking about heritage and U.S. heritage? Most people know you have a very smart audience, Jay. The U.S. The American heritage is not that perfect. So let's not go back to that.
When the president said he wasn't, he took off. When the president said he wasn't talking about race, do you believe him? I think he made a mistake. I think it was a misfire. And I think if he could go back, he wouldn't have made the statement. Because I think he did not expect the players to galvanize. He did not expect owners, many of which who had supported him, $7 million in campaign contributions. He didn't expect the owners in the NFL to not have his back. Robert Kraft even came out. Kraft was his backslapping buddy and came out against him. Said that it was inappropriate. You know why? Because Robert Kraft wants players. He needs players. And we're not far away from a day in which an owner makes a political stand and says, my players need to stand during the anthem, and players go, we're not playing for you. We're not far away from it. Mike's in Portland. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yeah, first of all, I want to say most of the comments I've heard today are from people that is uninformed. I've heard a lot of uninformed comments today. And the reason I say that is because most of the people who call in are the least affected by racism. So they don't really know what they're talking about. And also some guy said, well, this is a job and you shouldn't demonstrate on a job. That's no different than people in unions or strike. That's political. And you guys are okay with that, but you're not okay when African Americans do it. For some reason, you can't differentiate. One other thing, when some guy said, well, this is going to hurt the NFL. Well, you got to look at LeBron's and the African American guys that play basketball. What are you going to do when they start kneeling? So, because then they spill over to that. So you can't just isolate things. Nothing exists in a vacuum. You can't say that this is not about police brutality or racism. It's about the flag. Nothing exists in a vacuum. These things are
all related. Let me ask you something, because I feel like initially the protests were about, hey, we don't like what we see in this country. There are problems in this country, and this doesn't feel like it's my America. Colin Kaepernick said that, and I support his right to say that. But I felt like yesterday was more about Donald Trump comes out on Friday and he says, shut up and dance. And I think the players were galvanized by that more than anything. It was more like, don't tell us to sit quiet. Did you see it that way, or is it still about race and oppression?
Well, I'll be honest, I don't think Donald Trump is a racist. I really don't. And because I've seen enough evidence in his throughout his career to make me think that he's not a racist. First of all, Donald Trump is really tight with a lot of black boxers. I've not heard not one black boxer that have dealt with Donald Trump come out and talk against him. Mike Tyson, I mean, Evander Holyfield, I can go on and on and on and on. And one of his closest friends is that Don King. They're tight. So, and another thing.
Are you saying the president has black friends?
I'm saying he got black friends. And you know something? The black vanguard, the people that have always came out and talked about, like Jesse Jackson and all these guys, have you noticed? They have never came out and said anything negative against Donald Trump. You got to ask yourself why. So when you go and pull up a lot of archives of Donald Trump, you'll see Donald Trump out eating dinner, breaking bread at parties, and you'll be surprised who he's hanging out with. So I don't think he's a racist. I really don't. I think Donald Trump is a guy that travels in the fast lane. And because he's traveling in the fast lane, he got to say what's on his mind. And that's what I think, personally. That's just me.
All right.
I don't
think
you're racist.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
503-417-7575. Do you agree?
You want experts? We have them. The writers who know what's what. The people in the know. The A-Team on the Beavers and Ducks.
Touchdown, Beavers!
Touchdown, Freeman!
Brought to you by Bricks Tavern.
Oregon plays Cal Saturday. I really don't know what to expect. I don't know if they're going to win or lose. I don't know if they're going to look good or bad. I don't know if on offense they're going to get stymied by Justin Wilcox's defense at Cal. Cal looked really good for a while against USC on Saturday. Tyson Alger of the Oregonian joining us now. How do you feel about them now?
I think that's kind of a tough question because, you know, I think all of us kind of started to buy in a little bit. You know, 3-0 start, the offense is looking good, the defense is coming together, and I think everyone was getting pretty positive about this team, and it seems like for some good reasons. And, as you and I were talking about last week, we wanted to see what happened when this team gets tested with a little adversity. And, that game against Arizona State certainly looked winnable on their end if they would have played well. But between the penalties and, you know, the defense looked vulnerable, the offense took a lot of time to get into a rhythm. I think we're back to a place where, it's pretty hard to know what to expect from this team because it's certainly not going to be as smooth as maybe that first 3 weeks of the season made it out to seem. But then again, if you go back and look under a microscope over those first two games, I think there's definitely some flaws in those games that really kind of became very apparent in the Arizona State loss.
Let's play a game I like to call True or False. It's a new new concept. True or false, the first three games of their season were against cupcakes, and we got fooled a little bit.
Mostly true. I think there were moments in those games where the Ducks were tested, or there were certain things, objectives that they had to succeed at. But overall, I think when you go back and look at Oregon's first three opponents by the end of this season, I don't think they're going to be considered to be three quality opponents by any stretch of the imagination.
True or false, Oregon is a no-brainer bowl team?
False. I think they'll make a bowl game, but I don't think no-brainer. I don't think it's a guaranteed thing. When the schedule came out this year, and especially once the Ducks started to look like they were playing better, I think everyone automatically assumed the games against like the Arizona States of the world or like the Arizonas were going to be guaranteed wins. And, you know, that was a game against one of the Pac-12 not elite teams that they're certainly going to need to win those type of games to get the 6 wins. And with how backloaded the schedule is this year, I think getting the 6 wins is still doable, but it's certainly not something that's guaranteed to happen.
We're talking to Tyson Alger of the Oregonian. You can read him on Oregon Live. True or false continues here. True or false, you know, Justin Wilcox against the Oregon offense is the biggest matchup of this week for the Ducks.
True. Cal's turnaround on under Wilcox so far this season has been pretty impressive. They looked really good at points against USC last week. I thought they were going to be able to pull off that upset. Oregon's offense, you know, like I mentioned, it wasn't quite as good last week against Arizona State. And so, you know, this will be kind of a bounce back game for them. Games against Cal over the last couple seasons have been absolute offensive fireworks and all that sorts of stuff. There was the game last season that went into the overtimes. If Oregon can figure out that defense, I think that's going to be the story of that game.
True or false, Royce Freeman needs more than 18 or 19 carries for Oregon to be successful in offense?
True. As you saw the first 3 games, when Freeman's getting the ball with consistency, A, he's effective, but B, it means the Ducks are in a position where they're controlling the game. When Freeman's at his best, he's just chewing up yardage. It's creating first downs for the Ducks. It's allowing them to go with tempo. And when the best player in your team isn't able to, you know, have to control the game like that, they're in trouble. Freeman's the most sure commodity they have right now, and he's a player they definitely need to ride.
I have a problem because on Sunday nights, Sean Mager of the Oregonian asked me to join in that poll he does, that power poll. And he says, rank the Pac-12 teams. And so I'm on the plane. I'm heading back from Phoenix to Portland yesterday. And he asked me to rank the teams. And, of course, I can put Washington and USC on top. And then probably Washington State after that. But it's teams number 4 through 9. It's the Stanford, Cal, Oregon, Utah, Arizona State, Colorado, UCLA. In that group, give me who you think are the best 2 or 3 teams and who are the pretenders.
I go through this exact same problem as you do, John. The Pac-12 definitely has its kind of trio of elite teams right now. But after that, you know, I like Utah. Colorado, I don't really know what to expect out of them anymore. I thought they were going to put up a little bit of a better fight against Washington. But after that, it just seems like it's just like a whole bunch of different teams that could beat each other at different points of the season. I honestly have no idea what to expect when Oregon plays Cal this week. I think a lot of people were assuming the Ducks would win that game, but Cal is just off to as good of a start as Oregon has been this season. And, you know, I think it's just kind of a big bowl of mediocrity in there between those middle teams. Obviously, the Pac-12 has its kind of bottom feeders right now, but in the middle there, it's you can pretty much pick and choose every week.
Tyson Alger of the Oregonian joining us. How concerned does Willie Taggart have to be about the penalties?
I think a lot, because, you know, if they don't have a lot of those penalties, they're probably, you know, they're probably 4-0 right now. That's been the biggest problem with this team so far, is the defense is definitely better than it was a year ago. They're allowing 42 points a game last season. That's gotten better. The offense looks like it can be really good at times, but when you're having 10-plus penalties a game and really kind of, you know, stunting your progress in that, that kills this team. And that's something that I think is completely coachable. And that's the one thing you haven't seen improved upon from the team last year, is that team last year got so many penalties as well. There was all those unsportsmanlike penalties and just, you know, holds and all those other things. And that's the one kind of area that Taggart and staff so far haven't been remarkably better than they were a year ago in.
Yeah, I've watched this team, and even though they won those first three games, they were sloppy along the way, and I don't know if that is it discipline, is it hangover from Helfrich? After all, he's got mostly Helfrich guys on this team. Are those little things that everybody says are correctable? Are they correctable? Because we're dealing with the same guys who had discipline problems a year ago.
You know, that I think that's a really good point too. Is at some point, I mean, I don't think there's any coach that's out of practice that is saying, you know what, guys, these penalties are okay. Let's not try to clean this up. This is something Taggart has been harping on for the last 3 weeks, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better. So at some point, you know, this is it's definitely on the players. You know, some of these penalties are completely avoidable. So you know, I think it could just be, you know, maybe that's the group of players that they have right now that they just have a tendency of getting more penalties, and maybe that changes once you know, some different players get in there. But right now, it's just that's one of Oregon's flaws. It's susceptible to getting whistled a bunch.
Yeah, and I think this Cal game is going to be interesting because everyone's going to be watching for penalty flags, and everybody's going to be watching Oregon on defense. What do you think happened to Jim Levitt's defense?
I think it just finally got tested for the first time. You know, there's a lot of kind of factors going into that game. You're playing, give Arizona State credit. They're a pretty good offense with a pretty dynamic quarterback. But, you know, just a road game, night game, you know, you're coming off a game where everyone's praising you so much. I have to shut down Josh Allen. I think it was just.
Tyson Alger of the Oregonian joining us. His phone's breaking up there, but I was about done with him anyway, and he was just blathering on anyway about the defense. But here's the bottom line. I'm kidding. He's great at what he does. Jim Levitt's defense, questions to answer. Willie Taggart on the offensive side of the ball, got to get Royce Freeman the football. And look, they're not playing cupcakes anymore. That muddled mass that's in the middle of the Pac-12 conference that includes Stanford and UCLA and Arizona State and Oregon and Utah, that is quality athleticism in there. And the days of things looking easy for Oregon are done. That was answered on Saturday night in the desert. It died. It will not be easy for Oregon from here forward. Hey, an update on the Ray Rice situation. I'll share that coming up. And we'll also talk to a writer at the Washington Post who weighing in about the NFL.
Calls you out like that. Tom Coates. Supposed to be president of America. Supposed to be. Calls you out like that as a group. And there's more things going on in this world. That's personal. That's coming from you. I mean, I'm all cool. You know, you give people the benefit of the doubt. But when you come at that angle in that direction, directly at you, nah, man. One brother, you mess with one, you mess with us all. Don't nobody is divided in this. We was in unity. We wanted to stand for something. Just telling you right now, this man's not welcome here in Washington, D.C. He's not. I hope he don't be around when I see him. He's not welcome. I can say that to your face. You're not welcome here.
That's Josh Norman of the Washington Redskins. Liz Clark of the Washington Post had a great piece that she wrote about the weekend. It starts off like this. I just want to read a paragraph of this Liz Clark piece. In the Washington Post today, it says some stood, some kneeled, some remained in the locker room, choosing to speak through their absence from the NFL's pregame ceremonies in which the American flag is displayed and the national anthem sung. She talked about it from London to L.A. Virtually all the NFL players on the sideline of 14 games locked arms with each other in response to President Trump's 3-day campaign. By the way, he demanded that team owners fire or suspend players who kneel during the national anthem. I thought this was really interesting. As the Jacksonville Jaguars, Philadelphia Eagles, and Washington Redskins were joined on their sideline by their team owners who stood in unison with the teams, here was a byproduct that maybe the president didn't expect. He galvanized the NFL players. Players and owners who can't agree on things suddenly agreed, hey, we won't shut up. Liz Clark of the Washington Post wrote a great piece about it at thewashingtonpost.com. She joins us now. Liz, nice job. Thanks.
Well, thank you, John, and thanks for having me on.
You bet. What do you think yesterday was really about? Was it about oppression and race and an America that the players didn't like, or was this just the players going, don't tell us what to do?
You know, I think it was, it was kind of across the gamut, and I'm sure there were players who were very focused on, you know, what triggered Kaepernick's initial protest more than a year ago, which was police brutality against minorities and African Americans in particular. So I think for some, that is the galvanizing issue, the issue that still must be addressed and the issue they want to stand for. I know that some players I talked to, you know, have appreciated that point of view. They care about it, but not to the point of taking a game day action. But what President Trump said Friday night and continued through the weekend was just a galvanizing, game-changing moment, I think, for some other players who, in their words, said, if you're calling my brother an SOB, you're calling all of us SOBs. You know, you're disrespecting all 1,500 NFL players, our mothers. You know, that it's just, that was, again, a game changer. So I think there were players who were moved to take part for that reason, you know, feeling very insulted that was over the line, that was inappropriate. I know there are owners who feel the same, although their comments, their statements also had a range of specificity. Some criticized Trump directly for what he said. Others were just speaking affirmatively of players' right to express their views peaceably.
You've covered stuff like the league, the NFL for a long time, and have you ever seen anything that was so unifying?
No, I mean, and that really is what is so striking. It's not, the most proactive sport, league, or workforce. You know, there's a lot of things about the NFL that make it hard for players to speak out. Their contracts aren't guaranteed, for one thing. Their careers are short. It's like 3 years, and they're out of there. And, you know, drag one body off, drag another body on. And, you know, it just doesn't – it's not a place for great empowerment, with rare exceptions. So to see – I want to say there were 14 games yesterday.
That's right.
To see 28 teams in one variation or another stand shoulder to shoulder, as you said, some, you know, with their owner standing alongside, a few others just sitting it out altogether, you know, staying away from the field because they didn't want that awkward thing of some stand, some kneel, some sit. You know, we're going to make our statement together by just sitting this one out. You know, there were variations on the theme, but the theme was we are unified, we stand together. And once you have deeper conversations, they'll each have a different take on what it is that has moved them to take this action. But certainly what a movement that was quite small in the NFL is now kind of a conflagration because of, the attention and the pointed personal, direct criticism from the president leading up to Sunday.
Our guest is the Washington Post's Liz Clark. She's got a piece on the protests and the mass demonstrations in the NFL yesterday on WashingtonPost.com. You wrote that what makes this particularly notable is that this is a league that demands conformity. I mean, they get fined if their socks aren't right.
Exactly.
And their careers are so short. How is this different than maybe the NBA or Major League Baseball?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, that's a great question, and it's a really complex answer, and I may not do the best job, but, you know, it does get to kind of job security. The contracts in the NFL are not guaranteed, and it's very easy for the average fan or average politician to just dismiss them as millionaire whiners. You know, a lot of NFL players are not millionaires on that scale. Many leave the league, you know, with injuries, without insurance. It's just not, they're not remotely financially as set as NBA players or Major League Baseball players whose contracts are guaranteed. And I think, I mean, even from Pee Wee football, you know, the whole culture and really teaching model and way to winning in the NFL, you know, any sport that has that many players on the field, it's very much command and control. You know, you are prized and rewarded for executing your assignment exactly as it's drawn up. You know, it's not a sport that really celebrates spontaneity and freelancing and, you know, let me create a tennis shot you've never seen before and just wow you. It's, you know, it's a deep obedience, authoritative culture. And that's, you know, that's not to say that athletes don't have passionate opinions and issues they care about deeply and they want to speak out. It's just in this context that it we don't see a lot of it. So I think that is why it was striking. It was striking to see teams that, you know, really beat each other up, literally, all kind of adopting a stance, a tableau, you know, that was kind of arresting. It's just not what you typically see.
I see per CBS Sports that the network's week three game coverage was up 4% from same week last year. We're going to be doing a lot of this, the numbers, how are fans voting. What's the next thing that you're following when it comes to this story?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, let me just say and take a breath in what we've talked about so far. I do not mean to just gloss over the fact that there were audible boos in the stands, you know, at FedEx Field where the Redskins played the Raiders. There were other stadiums where there were boos. I mean, I've gotten a ton of emails today, not so much directed at me, but actually many were, but, you know, but just... You know, there's a big segment of NFL fans in the country who perceive this as completely inappropriate and inexcusable. So it's not like this is a big raw player standing together. I mean, that is incredibly notable and arresting, but you know, there are fans who don't go for this. I mean, there was a very interesting kind of confessional from Ben Roethlisberger an hour ago, who posted on his own website, you know, I slept really horribly last night. I had a sleepless night, and I wish we had handled this differently. And your listeners might want to find that because it's not for me to, you know, speak for him. But, you know, he's kind of haunted by, I don't know that we handled it the best way. So it's not... It's not easy. I don't know how much of this form of protest we're going to continue to see. I don't know if it's going to be a part of broadcast in the future. I don't know where it will go. And you never know where the president will take this. Will he move on to another hot button, very emotionally inflammatory issue that's in a different sport or on a whole different, you know, topic altogether, or is this something he's going to hammer home every Sunday? So I'm trying to watch all of that, and I don't see any sign of teams lashing out at players. There seem to be support for your right to peaceably protest.
All right.
But, it's fairly shocking.
Liz, I really appreciate your time and you joining us. I encourage people to read this piece on WashingtonPost.com. Thank you, Liz.
Oh, thank you. Bye-bye.
There she is from the Washington Post. So she raises the question, you know, she doesn't know what's going to happen from here. Will President Trump apologize? Will he dig in? Will the NFL team stop playing the anthem before games at stadiums? Will players decide, hey, none of us are coming out anytime for the anthem? What should happen next?
So I want you all to listen up. This is important stuff, all right?
Okay. Here we go.
The bald-faced truth.
Call 503-417-7575 or 877-733-0750 or text to 64636.
Here we go in 3, 2.
Now, from the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, here's John Canzano with a bald-faced truth.
This portion of the Bald-Faced Truth is brought to you by High Caliber Millwrights. Need a machinery job done right? Call High Caliber today.
This show moves fast. I love doing this show. I love that it's 3 hours in length. It's the right amount. It's going to leave you wanting more at the end. I mean, that's the question I have at the top of this hour. Do you want more discussion about what happened in the NFL yesterday, or do you want to turn the discussion back towards sports? For those of you out there who are yelling, stick to sports. I want sports. I come here for sports. The NFL's made that difficult today. Steph Curry has made that difficult in his little spat with the president. LeBron is making that difficult. And Ben Roethlisberger, as our guest in the last segment had pointed out, has issued a statement in which he says that the anthem is no place and time for a protest. He lost sleep over what the Pittsburgh Steelers did yesterday. The audience is very divided over whether or not people should be protesting. I'm divided over whether or not the anthem should even be played at a sporting event. While I will advocate for free speech, I mean, for crying out loud, my job is rooted in free speech. I'm paid for commentary in the Oregonian. I'm paid for commentary at KGW. I'm paid for commentary here. It's all opinion. I'd be the last guy who says, hey, it's not within their right. I'm biased that way. Like, the Constitution and the freedom of expression, and we all have a right to our opinion. Of course, this guy is going to be in favor of that. This guy makes a living on that. I don't hold a jackhammer for a living. I work 7 days a week, and people always say to me, you're on all the time. You work every day. But I look at him, and I'm like, as I drove to work today, I drive by hardworking blue-collar people who are out getting calluses on their hands, working their backsides off every day to feed their families. They aren't heard a lot of times. And where I'm going with this is, like, people keep making an idea or an example over the fact that the NFL players are making high incomes. As if, like Newt Gingrich said, these players need a therapist if they feel oppressed. I don't think that's it. And I hate to make it about, like, politicians being out of touch, but Newt, I don't think that the NFL, the random NFL player, feels financially oppressed or oppressed by the system that granted them the life that they have in the NFL. I think what the NFL player has been subject to, and in some cases, the African-American NFL player, even if they have money, still feels that this country's got work to do because they can still feel the culture of America at work. And in a lot of cases, it's working against them, even if they have money. See, everybody wants to make it about, well, you're doing all right. Why would you be complaining? And I get that. Like, at knee jerk, that's my reaction too. Like, Colin Kaepernick had a great life in the NFL. How could he be against America? But what I see Colin Kaepernick doing and talking about and thinking and saying is I see Colin Kaepernick interested in what's going on in the rest of America. And look, man, that's why I open the phone lines here, and I don't care what your political affiliation is. I don't care if you lean right or left. I don't care if you're a football lover or if you are a soccer lover or if you love Major League Baseball, basketball. If you've got an opinion, I'll give you the platform. Now, if you say something dumb, I'm going to call you on it. But I'm never going to have somebody call in, and it's happened during the show, who says, hey, these guys don't have the right to protest. That's a discussion we can have. But I'm never, if somebody's going to go, you know what, I don't believe that it's the right time or place, or I disagree even with their stance on the protest, I want to hear more. Tell me more about that. And maybe that's just me because I work in the industry that I work in. And people are saying it's the liberal sports media perpetuating the protest. It's the liberal sports media giving it all the attention. No, you have to think about it. Media at its core is rooted in the principle in the Constitution that says, you know, hey, we've all got a right for our opinion. That's what makes it America. That's why it's not North Korea. Okay, nobody's getting jailed for saying America's got problems. Nobody's going to get jailed for saying, man, I disagree with the president. He's an idiot. Nobody's going to prison for that. So, of course, it's being perpetuated by media. Of course it is, because media believe deeply and strongly in the right of expression. And I brought it up earlier in the show. you know, I don't think anybody's turning off the NFL. I think if you're turning off the NFL because of the protesting, you are already probably turning off the NFL, and I think you're just grandstanding. I don't think anybody out there is so turned off by the idea of somebody sitting, they're kneeling, or not coming out for the anthem, that they're going to go, I'm not going to watch the NFL. I kind of think that you weren't watching the NFL anyway. But I do believe that Sunday was rooted more in the idea that the president told a very galvanized workforce to shut up and dance. And I think they all went, oh yeah, we don't have to do that. 503-417-7575. Take this show where you want it to go. You want to talk sports? Let's talk sports. You want to talk politics? We'll talk it. You want to talk about the anthem, the protest? We'll talk it. You are in control of this segment of radio. I had there, you know, in this show, there are 12 segments. Okay? There are 12 segments of radio. I get the other 11. You get this one. 503-417-7575. What do we want to talk about? Pat in Vancouver, where do you want to go?
I want to talk about the stance and the racial tension that's going on, John. And I just want to say I grew up in Northeast Portland in the 70s. I was around in the race riots as a young kid by Alberta when the theater was burnt down. I've had many black friends. I've had many black enemies. And I'm going to give you an example. I get frustrated with this whole situation by the players, by the whole climate of it, because America is the land of opportunity, and it's what you make of it. And I'm going to give you an example that I had Saturday at the Nike store, Martin Luther King. I was in there shopping with my wife, bought a pair of basketball shoes, and this young black man, not African-American, which muddled up all the time. They prefer black man. He helped us because they had a portable cashier station. I asked him what was going on. Very polite, very in tune with everything. I go, well, what are you doing after Nike? He goes, oh, I'm getting my marketing degree, and I'm moving on, and, you know, hopefully I'm going to have, you know, find a place, have a good job. Spoke eloquently. I am not buying this. I understand people are a product of their environment. Me, you, them, Hispanics, whoever. A lot of this is created by the environment in which they're raised, not the opportunity that's out there. And this is so getting so muddled that it's depressing for everybody to always try and voice their opinion, and somebody's got to be right. The best thing that ever happened was the Pittsburgh Steelers and the other teams that didn't come out because they didn't give Trump what he wants, which is a reaction. And shame on the people that haven't understood that yet, because that's all he wants.
I'm not sure that he wanted that reaction, nor did he expect the NFL to be so galvanized. I think he expected they'd be more split. The NFL looked very galvanized. There was unification in the message that, hey, it's not okay, we're not following the rules. I think President Trump was speaking in Alabama and expected that he was just giving his supporters what they wanted to hear. And I don't think he thought much. And like a lot of what he says, look, he occasionally comes up with some sound logic or a position where I go, you know, he's not off on that. But it's the packaging around it that is always tone deaf. That's where I think he runs into problems. His personality. Steve's in Happy Valley. Steve, welcome.
Hey, thanks. My thought is sports has always been my refuge from politics. There's politics absolutely everywhere. And I think that's what absolutely drives me nuts about this. So what I've been doing is I skip the first quarter, and if they start talking about it or banging on that drum too much, I just change the channel. I get it everywhere else. I don't need it in my sports.
Yeah, but
I also think that, I mean, when they don the uniform, they are branding the NFL, and it's really the NFL's call what they do.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Steve, here's where I disagree, though. I mean, I don't know what you do for a living, but, you know, if people tell me, hey, I don't come to you to get everything else, I'm like, okay, so I'm only allowed to talk about sports? Like, there's a person in that uniform. You get that, right?
Yes, and they can outside of the playing field, they can talk as much as they want, and I whether it's
yeah, but you didn't say that to Jesse Owens in the Olympics in Berlin. You didn't say it to Jackie Robinson. You didn't say it to Muhammad Ali. Why now?
Well, there is a difference, first of all, with, like, Jesse Owens. Well, forgive me on my history, but he was not in your face about what he broke through. He was very humble about it. Same thing with Jackie Robinson. Jackie Robinson knew that how he behaved would lay the groundwork for how the rest of any integration would happen.
Yeah. I get what you're saying, and I understand that. I understand people's frustration with it, but what I'm hearing is, I just want you to shut up and dance. I don't want you to have anything else to offer me, and I disagree with that. There is a person in those uniforms. I have full phone lines, but we'll take more of your calls. But there is a person in the uniform. There is a person that owns the team. There is a person that is the head coach. It's not just about football. This radio show is not just about sports. I've got three daughters. I've got a wife. I've got friends. I've got a family. I have interests outside of sports. Guess what? Sports is probably 10% of what I want to talk about when I come in here. 90% of me is not sports. My neighbors knock on the door. I got a knock one day. What are you watching? I said, HGTV. Why? He's like, it's Saturday. There's so many games on. I want to know what I'm supposed to be watching. I figured you could tell me. I'm not just a robot that's just going to talk about sports. The players are not just there to dance for you. I'm interested in other things. I'm interested in my back lawn. I'm interested in cars. I'm interested in politics. I'm interested in food. I love the home improvement shows. I'm sorry to burst the bubble, but I've got interests outside of sports. More of your phone calls next. Travel. I like to get on an airplane and go somewhere warm. I do. I have confession, my guilty pleasure. I'm watching a lot of Game of Thrones. I like that series. I watch Netflix. I watch House of Cards. Probably that's like the criticism. I look at the stuff in my house. I've got Apple TV. I've got Netflix. I've got Amazon Prime. And I have DirecTV. I can watch pretty much everything except for the Pac-12 network. Like, that's how, I don't know, I don't even know what I'm spending. That's how bad it is. I don't want to know what I'm spending on all those things. But what I'm saying is, I've got interests that are outside of sports. I like food. I love to work out. I'm under construction right now. I'm on a gym kick. I'm riding the bike. I'm banging the steel. As Gliss would say, to come back to me in 2 or 3 months and talk to me, guess what? It's like about 7 weeks later. I'm down about 11 pounds, getting ready for competition. Not really. I don't know what competition it is, but I have interests outside of sports. I'm interested in my kids. My 14-year-old, I mentioned it to probably nauseate with you with it, but she's into volleyball. She plays high school volleyball. I love watching her games. I like to read, and not always about sports. And so when people say, I just want the players to be about football, or they say, shut up and dance, there is a racial undertone to it. And Dan on Twitter says there is a very racist tone of shut up and dance. This is what I'm paying for. Be quiet and play. I don't come here to hear what you have to think about politics. I come here to watch you play football. Why don't we hold actors to that standard? Think about that. Why don't we hold musicians to that standard? Why athletes? And is it rooted in race? 503-417-7575 is a number. Phone lines are jammed. People want to talk about this. Where do you want this to go? If you want to talk sports, if you want to call in and ask me about Oregon's running game, we can do that. You want to talk Oregon State and what they're going to do to fix things. Guess what? Here's my idea for Gary Anderson. My latest idea. I think Gary Anderson's offense is very unimaginative. I think they need better players. But I also think it would benefit by having a consultant come in and watch some film, give them some offensive identity ideas, give them some feedback. Their offensive coordinator, Kevin McGivin, I think he could use another set of eyes on things. I'm not saying fire him. I'm saying offensive consultant. And I know this, and this is going to be a little bit of news, and this is the kind of treat I give you since you're a BFT listener. Yesterday, Gary Anderson, the Oregon State coach, and Mark Helfrich, the former Oregon coach, had a long conversation. They happened to be on a plane together that flew into Eugene, and they sat together and they talked on that plane trip. And I said to Gary Anderson, after I found that out, hire Helfrich. Make him a consultant. You know, Helfrich is busy with TV, so he probably wouldn't do it. But he just needs another set of eyeballs on things at Oregon State. So if you want to talk sports, I'll talk it. But the phone lines are jammed, and I'm guessing you want to talk something else. Let's go to Bob in Columbia River. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, John. You touched on something there that I wasn't talking about, but you said, you know, we only hold it to athletes. Well, you're forgetting Jane Fonda. The boys that served, none of us have ever forgive her. So, and that's been a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
But Kaepernick, it feels like to me, a couple of years ago, had fallen from fame. He wasn't a starting quarterback anymore. He was delegated to a second or a third string quarterback. And it just seems like he was trying to find something to get himself back in the limelight, and he found it.
Yeah, it might be true, Bob. It might be true that he kind of saw, like, look, I'm going to have a short career here. I want to be known. What am I going to do after football? I want to be known for something. Let me take a stand. But you can't tell me he's not among the best 64 quarterbacks in the world, not based on what we're seeing on the field. Let's be honest. As part of this radio show team, I look for people who are team players. Alabama, Adriana, Gliss, Brandon, the interns that are in the building. I'm always looking for people who can work together, people who are smart. My people are smart. They always go on to big things after they work on this show. I get smart people, smarter than me, to work on the show. And I get people who can work together to work on the show. But I can tell you this. If somebody is a distraction, they're gone. And I think Colin Kaepernick was viewed as a distraction. What is the golden rule here on this show? It's what goes on air comes first. So if you are in the way of what's going on air, forget it. And I think the same went for NFL teams until yesterday, that if you were a big distraction, you weren't worth the trouble. And Colin Kaepernick was a distraction. So I wonder, in the wake of yesterday, with everybody protesting and or demonstrating in their own way, if that opens the door back up for Colin Kaepernick, and which NFL team's going to do it? Gary's in Eugene. Gary, thanks for listening to the show. What's up?
Hey, John. I would love it if one team or one organization could eloquently explain what this is changing and eloquently explain what this protest is all about. That's the first thing. No one has done that yet. Eloquently explain what this is all about. In order to actually enact change, you have to act, and that stands for actually changes things. If they want to enact change, if Michael Bennett wants to enact change, Michael, get on television, get on the radio, and speak eloquently about the ills of the black community. And you can Google the ills of the black community, and let's speak openly about those ills. And to compare this to Jesse Owens and Muhammad Ali's era makes no sense. That was a time when young black men were being sent to the battlefield overseas, but the schools were segregated at home. We are now in an environment where you can get a job and you can get a college scholarship simply because of your skin color. Whether that's right or wrong, the environments are so different, John.
Well, I think it's a moving target, but here's the bottom line. If we want to talk about the environment today, look at the military. It's comprised largely of people on the socioeconomic ladder that are at the bottom part of the ladder. Poor kids end up in the military. Poor kids end up fighting overseas and dying. And rich kids go to college. There's the difference. So, and when you look at that on a sliding scale of race, do you find that the average black American household earns less than the white American household? Of course you do. Yes, it's a reality. So I don't blame the players, even though they're making millions of dollars, for looking around the country and going, this is a problem. Now, to the caller's point, I think the protests yesterday were about a different thing. I don't think it was about America In an America that the players go, that's not my America. I don't think it was about race. I don't think it was about the economy. I don't think it was about police brutality. I think yesterday was about the president of the United States saying that players who protest disrespect America and should be fired. Shut up and dance. And I think the players were galvanized by the idea, it was a constitutional theme. The players were galvanized by the idea that, no, we're not going to go quietly. No, we're not going to shut up. No, we're going to band together. You know what we're going to do? We're going to join arms. You know what we're going to do? We're not going to come out for the anthem. You know what we're going to do? We're all going to kneel. Our owner's going to join us on the sideline. The commissioner of the NFL is going to join us with a statement. Every team in the league made a statement. And all of it was unified. The NFL unified over this. Can't agree on anything. Can't agree on expansion. Can't agree on a TV deal. Can't agree on rules, the rule changes. It's never unanimous. Players can't agree on anything. And yet the players all stood together. Michael Bennett, to your point, said this about President Trump.
It's beyond politics. It's about being a human being and having dignity and compassion for other human beings, regardless of their race and their gender. It's just about bringing people together. And I think for us, it's always going to be about that. And I think at some point, it's always just bigger than sports.
Is that not eloquent enough for you? Is that not eloquent enough for the audience? It's not a political statement. Listen again what he says.
It's beyond politics. It's about being a human being and having dignity and compassion for other human beings, regardless of their race and their gender. It's just about bringing people together. And I think for us, it's always going to be about that. And I think at some point, it's always just bigger than sports.
Forget politics if you can't. I know it's a hard thing to do. I don't care if you voted for Trump, you voted for Hillary, you voted somewhere else, you wrote yourself in. I don't care. Here's the point. He is advocating, Michael Bennett and the players are advocating, hey, treat us like humans, regardless of race. Treat us like we've got rights. And I think that's why this incensed people to the point where they protested, because not every player in the NFL, not every team, not every owner, not the commissioner, nobody was galvanized before this. I disagree that that's not eloquent. I think that's really eloquent. Like more eloquent than I have offered today on the show. It's about human beings. Tracy's in Tigard. Tracy, what's up?
Hey, well, I disagree with you. I mean, it seems like you are just heading in a one-way direction. And this is about race. And it's been growing from the beginning of when Kaepernick started this. And I think there's a different platform to do this on, but I pay to go to the games. I pay expensive tickets, taking my family to games for the internet, for the everything we do following football. And that just messes up the whole beginning of every single game that you're going to watch. And it's just, I think it's a bunch of baloney.
I think that's nonsense, Tracy. I don't think you were watching the national anthem and looking at the sideline and saying, oh, this taints my whole experience. Go away, run away. Gosh. Hung up on himself. I don't think for a second that you were paying attention during the anthem before. I don't even know if you stood. If you were in line buying a beer, I don't even know if you turned around. Well, I'm getting a beer. Let's be real about this. It hasn't changed your mind. You're only focused on your politics. Set your politics down. Let's continue the discussion next. I'm going to interject some sports into this show periodically. Talk to Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner at the Oregon-Arizona State game. He was in the press box. I talked to him a little bit, and I asked him about Las Vegas. I was like, Larry, what do you think of Vegas? No, I didn't say that. I said, Larry, you took the Pac-12 basketball tournament to Vegas. Remember, it was at Staples Center and didn't draw very well, and you've seen in football where they had the Pac-12 championship game. It kind of moved around. It was hosted, and now they've settled on Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara as the site at least through 2019. I asked him about Las Vegas Would he move the conference championship game to Vegas? And I've got audio of that I can play. But I'll just tell you this, to paraphrase Larry Scott. He was like, Vegas and L.A. present some opportunities for the Pac-12 in a number of ways. Here's where. First of all, you could take the conference championship game to Vegas or L.A. You could rotate it between the two. NFL stadiums being built in both places. Or you could take it to Vegas and just leave it there, which was where I would vote. Or, better yet, Vegas and L.A. present the Pac-12 with a couple of options. You know how those major conference, Power 5 conference matchups that happen in the early part of college football season are sometimes or often played at neutral sites? How about, like, Oregon-Alabama, Oregon-Ohio State, USC-Ohio State, USC-Alabama in L.A. or Vegas in a non-conference game in the early part of the Pac-12 season? Larry Scott said all options are on the table. And I don't expect that game's going to stay at Levi Stadium. Many of you want to talk about the NFL. George in Portland is among them, and he's been holding. George, welcome to the show.
Hi there. You know, the problem with the NFL protest is that it's misdirected anger. They chose to attack the American flag and the American national anthem when it's only a few people who are rotten apples in America that are responsible for it. And you can't offend an entire nation just because there are a few rotten apples in that nation. And I think it's misdirected anger, and that when you have misdirected anger, that's going to lead a backlash. You can't expect to protest and have misdirected anger and not have people protest your protest. And I think the players have gone a little bit over their boots in expecting.
All right. But what do you want them to do, George? If I tell you, if the president of the United States says, George, I don't want you to say another word. I want you to shut up and go to work. That's not going to make you happy, George. What do you want them to do?
There are other places to give the outlet. I mean, when you're at work, you're supposed to be doing your work. You're not supposed to be doing protests.
Is the national anthem part of their job, though? Is that part of the job, or is that just something they play before the games to get it? And here's the other thing. What about, you know, so you're looking for a convenient place?
It's part of the job. They're at work.
But how about a convenient place to protest? Is that what you're saying? Like somewhere where George doesn't have to see it, or the president doesn't have to see it? Or I'm just playing devil's advocate here. It's like it's made you uncomfortable. That's the point of a protest.
No, but it's also an employer's job to protect the business and the outlook of the company. I mean, if you want to protest on your own time, that's something.
No, that's why I disagree with you. It's like telling Rosa Parks, hey, don't, you know, you can ride in the front of the bus, but not this bus. It's not, and by the way, the employer, in this case, the NFL, has said it doesn't have a problem with the protests. So what George is saying is flawed in so many ways. And I love George. He calls in all the time. But you can't tell the players, hey, protest in some way that I don't have to see. You know, like, I would love that. There are protests all the time in Portland. How about the guys that were sleeping in the park, the Occupy guys here? They occupied the park in downtown Portland. I was so bent over that. I was like, you're ruining the park. Get a job. Why? I'm trying to get home and you're in my way. I had all of those thoughts. They're all very selfish thoughts, okay? But I got to give them some credit. They kind of got us to notice them. And that's the point of a protest. If it's a peaceful protest and nobody's harmed, and my problem with the Occupy was it was draining resources from the city with police and law enforcement and all the policing of that had to, and the crime that eventually came out of it. And to George's point, George is just saying, look, go ahead and protest, but not where I have to see it. And I don't blame George. He can have his opinion. I support his right to have an opinion. I don't agree with it. Joe's in Eugene. Joe, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, I ain't going to mess on my head. Have you played the audio of what Trump actually said?
Yeah, we played it early in the show.
Because I keep hearing you say, shut up and dance. I went and listened to it, and I didn't hear that.
What'd you hear?
I mean,
shut up and play. Sit down or get fired.
Well, he's saying stand up for the national anthem, and where I'm at on it is I feel they should stand for the national anthem. If they want to do anything other than that, it is their right to protest. Just don't pick that instance to do it.
So when the anthem comes on, how would you like them to stand?
Stand with their hands over the heart and honor the country.
All right. Do they have to look at the flag, or is it okay if they stand? Do they have to face the flag, or what if their shoulders to the flag? What I'm getting at is, in what country, Joe, do you get to dictate how people respond to the national anthem? The Constitution of this country says, Joe, you have a right to do what you want to do. Until you start breaking laws and until you start harming other people, Joe, you're okay. Joe, if you want to have a hand over your heart, go ahead. If you want to salute the flag, go ahead. But I just don't get why it's that important to you that they do it how you do it.
I feel they're dishonoring the people that fought for their right for freedom. That's my personal feeling on it.
And I support your right to have that thought. I do. I'm not mad at you. I don't think you're a bad person. I don't think you're dumb. I appreciate that you listen. We just disagree on it.
Well, that's fine.
I don't see that as dishonoring the people who fought for it. I have people in my family who fought for that, and I don't know that they were fighting for NFL players in the flag. They were fighting for this country.
Right, and I feel they're disrespecting America, and that's how I feel about it. I feel they're dishonoring the people that fought and died for this country. If you want to protest, there is Twitter, there's Facebook, there is interviews after. They can state their opinion all they want, but stand up and salute the flag. That's where I'm at.
Okay, appreciate
it. We can disagree on it.
Yeah, we disagree. You're not a bad person. I love you for listening. But here's the bottom line. If the president of the United States is telling players, I'm not okay with you kneeling during the anthem, you should be fired if you do it. What I felt like happened on Sunday was not about race. I don't think it was about the economy. I don't think it was about police brutality. I think it was about the president saying to players, you better stand. And the players going, we don't have to. And it was childlike, maybe a little bit on both sides. But I agree with the passion. And I agree with the principles of it. And I don't think anybody cared. Brandon Roy of the Blazers used to stand in the tunnel during the anthem. He didn't come out. Wasn't a very big deal. And I remember getting on him and going, hey, you should be with your team. That's not very captain-like. And I didn't see it as disrespectful to America. I just saw it as he wasn't being a very good leader because I wanted him to stand with his team. I thought he was separating himself as a superstar. I don't know. I think a lot of you during the national anthem probably don't stand quietly. I don't know why we play it at sporting events, for that matter. Why is that important? Why don't we play it at concerts and movies? Why don't we play the national anthem before this radio show? It's entertainment. You know, we've had the Star Spangled Banner sung on this show many times. We had Bill Shonley do God Bless America one time. We were like, you know, it was like, how do we do this? We had Natalie Gilbert. Remember Natalie Gilbert? She was the young girl, the Blazer fan who started that national anthem and...
say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the stars like stars?
And from there, you know what happened. We'll talk more about that next. All right, NFL player. Look, I love all of you. I love you if you're a Republican or Democrat. I love you if you are... If you are somebody who thinks for themselves, I even love you if you're somebody who goes, man, what I don't like on the show is people who will come on and tell everybody how to think. I'm never going to tell you to think how I think. I think you're nuts if you agreed with everything that I say. I do. My wife doesn't agree with everything that I say. But let's go back to why the national anthem is even played at NFL games. You know, prior to 2009, that the NFL players were never on the field during the national anthem. They weren't out there. In 2009, the Department of Defense and the National Guard paid the NFL $12 million to have the anthem be a bigger part of the league. The players participate in it. You know why the National Guard and the Department of Defense wanted that? It helps with recruitment. It helps with the idea that this is America. They were no different than the sneaker companies, putting sneakers on the shoes of the players going, hey, they wear our brand. This was the Department of Defense and the National Guard telling the NFL, we're going to give you $12 million. We're going to subsidize the playing of the national anthem, God Bless America, different patriotic things that went on. Military days. Remember the military days you see in college football, the NFL? Those were bought. That was paid for. It was advertising. It was branding for the military. So now we've got the players out on the field, and the players are going, looking around going, hey, this is a good place for me to protest because people are watching. And then when the president on Friday starts to come out and he says, listen, these players should stand. It disrespects America. You should stand up or you should be fired. He thinks he's rallying his supporters, but really he's galvanizing the players who are going, wait a minute. President's trying to tell us what to do? No. Let's go out to the phone lines. Steve's in Portland. Steve, what's on your mind?
Well, I've been listening to your show for a little while, and what has me concerned is you're putting out some incorrect information. First Amendment right does not apply to private employer. If an employer such as Jerry Jones or any owner wants to silence that, they can. They have that right. So when you say it's a First Amendment right, that doesn't apply to private sector. If I did this to my company, I'd be terminated on the spot. So it's only acceptable if the owners allow it. And then I don't think you realize that when 200 players do that, the backlash, take a look at the ratings nationally last night for that game or any of the games across the board. It's all being listed on the Internet. It's literally down 11 to 14%. The next thing will be sponsors polling. Do you understand that people died for less than $12,000 a year, like my brother in Vietnam, just trying to lift that flag, just trying to pick it up off the ground, like Iwo Jima? So when you say that they're not disrespecting the flag, the combination of kneeling at the base of our United States flag will be nothing but an irritant to the majority of the people in this country, and people will turn this league off. So they're committing suicide. They're going to lose sponsors. They're going to lose viewers. When I talked to your person earlier, I've been watching football since 1966. I've been a Cincinnati Bengals fan since the inaugural season in 1968. I didn't watch the game yesterday against the Green Bay Packers. Didn't even turn it on. I think that's the first Bengal game I've missed in my lifetime.
What else did you do? What did you do?
I spent time with my family.
Good.
I went out to lunch with my wife.
I'm all for that.
I've got more important things to do than to turn on the TV and support people disrespecting the flag. Now, that's my opinion.
That's your opinion. And so, look, this show. So hold on, Steve. I let you talk for 2 minutes. Let's just have a discussion here. But this show, too, when I talk about the First Amendment and I bring you on the show, this show, it's like technically, yeah, I can cut you off at any time if I wanted to get rid of you. But what I'm saying is in a larger context that if you have a president who's telling people to stand up and respect the flag or you should be fired, and you have a league saying, like, all 32 teams coming out saying, hey, we're with the players. It's kind of a moot point at that point. And I wonder when you look at the freedom of expression, like I totally support your right to come on the show and say how you feel because I love that balance. But I also, I don't think they're disrespecting the flag. I think they're trying to disrespect the president.
Okay, well, I have a question then for you, okay? When we watch protests on TV, you know, from other parts of the country over deaths or murder or whatever it may be, do you ever notice that the flag is always being burned? So, yes, this is about the flag. That's why they chose the flag to kneel. They knew it was a lightning bolt. It was chosen for that reason. Okay?
He made it. Didn't he make it the reason, though? Didn't he say, shut up and dance?
No. Colin Kaepernick made it the reason back in 2016. Have you seen the ratings since Colin Kaepernick did this?
Yeah, I don't think, but Steve, I don't think the ratings are down because of Kaepernick. I think the ratings are down because games are too long. There's too many games. There's a saturation of the product. I think the product is not as good as it was back in the day. You know the NFL of the 80s was better than this, Steve. You know that, and I know it. We both watched it.
Then why is it that all the surveys like Pew and all the non-biased surveys, when they go to 2,000, 3,000, 5,000, 7,000, 71% says it's because of the national anthem. How come they got booed soundly in New England yesterday and most every city? No, sir, you're wrong.
They didn't get booed soundly. They got when the visiting team ran onto the field, they got booed. All right? So how much of that? Look, I gave you the right to come on and say your opinion. And the best part of that was Steve saying, this doesn't matter that much to me. I went and hung out with my family instead. And by the way, the CBS ratings were up 4%. NBC game was down 11%. How much of that was due to the fact that the Raiders were non-competitive? How much of that was due to the fact that, it was people turned off by it? I don't know. We're going to find out. I don't think sponsors are going to drop the NFL. I think the public is divided over this. And I think it's about 50-50. That's why I like Steve calling in. Because I do think half the people who saw yesterday go down are going to feel like Steve feels. I had an engineer who works here at the station who popped in on the commercial break, and he said, you know what? It bothered me, because his father is a veteran. He said, it bothered me. It gave me a sour taste in my mouth. Because he doesn't agree with it. And it's okay, but I don't think you were ever watching the football games for the national anthem. And I don't think the fact that players made a statement yesterday was, I don't think it was about Black Lives Matter. I don't think it was about police brutality. I don't think it was about race. I think the players responded to Donald Trump, President Trump's comments on Friday, and they reacted to that directly. Otherwise, they would have been protesting a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and they weren't. But I still respect Steve. He brings up the First Amendment, and he's right about the First Amendment. It doesn't apply to private businesses, whatever. And I say all the time, if I say something ignorant and stupid and offensive on this show, I could get fired. It's true. And I can't say, well, it's a First Amendment. But what I'm talking about is the Constitution and the players sitting on a platform going, we just got told by the president that we're not allowed to do this. I'm an American. I am allowed. And they had the support of the league to boot. So, yeah, if you don't want to watch, don't watch. And like I asked him, I was most impressed with the fact that he went to lunch with his wife and hung out with his family. That's something we can agree on. And that's the bigger point. The bigger point is, we can sit here and we can talk about like all these things that we are divided over. Or frankly, and this is what bothers me most about what's gone down here since the election. I didn't love Hillary Clinton. I didn't love Donald Trump either. I had problems with both of them. But what I especially don't like and what's happened here in our country is that we are so divided. Everybody's angry. Steve's angry, and I don't blame him. Other people on the other side of the issue are angry, and I don't blame him. We have been divided. It was unnecessary for the president to make this statement. Really? What did he expect was going to happen? That the players were all going to stand up and go, well, the president said we had to stand up. Of course the players knelt. Of course the team stayed in. I hope all 32 teams just stay in the locker room like they did before 2009. It's over at that point. Because the issues need to be not stick to sports, but we need to be focused on things like, race in America, the socioeconomic problems this country has, the economic problems that we have, North Korea. There are big issues that this country faces, healthcare. It's like, I want the vast majority of people in America to be happy and feel like they're making it. And instead, I just feel like everybody's divided and angry. And that's where I have a problem. And I know that a lot of you want to weigh in on this. You can tweet at me at John Canzano BFT. I want to welcome you to do that. And you can say, oh, it's, is it your constitutional right or this or that? But here's the bottom line. I think we all agree on the premise that we all should have an opinion on things. I think we also agree that as a country, we would hope that we're as unified as we possibly can be. So stew on that for a little bit.